This week's episode of Still Entitled is made possible with support from the Rochester Institute of Technology. Faculty and students at Rochester Institute of Technology recently built a robot fish. Why? Because it could lead to a new wave of prosthetics, and now we're all hooked. At RIT, that creative team of engineers is on to something life-changing. Learn more about the project at rit.edu/untitled. And now on with the show.
Welcome to Still Entitled, the Adam Savage Project. I'm Will.
I'm Adam.
And I'm Norm.
Well, good morning.
Hello, lads. Hello, everyone.
Hello.
Oh, very relaxed this week.
Yeah.
Yeah, it feels like a lot has been...
Stuff's happened.
Stuff has happened. Oh, my God. Where should we start?
Well, so I do want to point out that it's going to be a couple weeks before the next...
podcast.
For the next podcast.
Yeah, you're taking some time off.
Yeah, I'm taking
we're going to go walk the earth?
Well, it's called being a bum, Vince.
You're going to put the Totoro suit and walk around the mission to see what happens, right?
Exactly. Okay. But yeah, now that the book is out and Savage Builds has premiered.
But hey, that first episode, very good.
So psyched.
Yeah.
So psyched. You've got the Iron Man right
I
behind
know.
You
there.
Multiple family members have called me to comment on that.
Oh, really?
Like, hey, this was really good.
The response has been great. It's been really exciting to finally show this off.
Friday at 10 on Discovery.
Friday at 10 on Discovery. And you know, check your local listings for other airings on Discovery and Science Channel on Wednesdays after mm-hmm. BattleBots.
Discovery Go,
their app if yeah. you have a cable subscription.
And I think it's even the first episode is free for anyone without a sign in to watch in the U.S. So you can right now, after listening to this podcast, go log on and watch it.
And I can't remember the exact date, but it is airing soon in Discovery UK for our UK listeners. And each time we know when it's airing in another country, it'll show up in my Twitter feed. So that's where you can go look for that and your local listings.
I mean, these are dream projects, right? Like, this is stuff that's been on the notebook of yours throughout the rest of these episodes, these eight episodes, like, are the things that we've heard you kind of, like, think about and now... You've had the team and the budget to do them, and they are in big scale.
It's really, really fun to see Jenny Jardin from Boing Boing, who's a friend, full disclosure, tweeted that it's a we show, not a me show.
Yeah.
And I appreciated that she got that. That was an ethos that was deeply imbued among the crew, and I wanted that to come across, and I'm really glad that it did.
I like that you showed more building than we usually got on Mythbusters.
Yeah.
Like, I thought that was really good. I absolutely loved the flying montage. Like, I don't think I've ever seen you lay down on a shoot before. So I can only imagine how broken and exhausted. Like,
ask away.
So when you were doing, like, is it like doing push-ups when you're trying to get the flight suit to fly? Is it like doing push-ups on a bar, on a parallel bars where you have to hold the bars together too?
Negative.
Okay.
No. And in fact, Richard's an extreme athlete. Watching him do those, like, sideways chin-ups, right?
Yeah.
Like, he is a, you know, it doesn't take that kind of strength. And in fact, one of the most inspiring things for me to get it, how to do it, was that one of his team weighs maybe 120 pounds wet.
Oh, wow.
And I wouldn't say he's scrawny, but he's definitely not built like Richard is. And Richard kept on saying it's not about strength, it's about geometry. And so, you know, you think you could, I kept thinking I could attune it with the throttle, but the throttle's not reactive enough.
The throttle's just on or off, more or less, right?
It is somewhat proportional, but okay. Not in a way that's, again, reactive enough for you to be able to respond to microstimuli. It's built so that you throttle all the way up and it pushes your arms out. And then as you vector them in, you create the thrust that rises you off the ground. Mm. And it's tiring if you're not doing it right.
Oh.
What did you want to do in not doing it right that made it difficult?
I wasn't letting my legs lift off the ground. I was
it kind of
requires leaning forward into almost a fall.
So it's like you're leaning on like a handrail in front of you.
A little bit.
And doing one of those kind of push-up
things. And I kept on thinking I would kick myself up and my legs were flailing around, which was throwing off my center of gravity a lot.
Ah.
And if you watch Richard go, his legs are almost vestigial at the moment he takes the air. They just hang there. And it really, like, what's funny for me when I watch the footage is it looks, if I was watching it and I hadn't made the show, I'd be like, well, I feel like they're painting out a wire.
Yeah.
Right? Because it looks so much like you are just being lifted from
the
center.
When he does it,
it
looks beautiful.
Yeah.
It looks, you didn't look graceful and
no,
beautiful.
No, I didn't.
I'm sorry.
I didn't. Yeah. But it's hard to learn a skill in 5-minute increments.
Right.
While cameras are on you and the noise. It was amazing.
So the closest thing, I learned to barefoot water ski when I was a much younger man.
Yeah.
And the process for that was similar. Like you're in a boat, you're going 30 miles an hour, and then you kind of shimmy out of boom and you put your feet down and you keep going for as long as you can hold on to the boom. And then you go, and it's incredibly frustrating because like each time you do it, you're just wiped out afterwards.
Right.
And then you have to climb back up in the boat and do the whole thing again. And there's this constant downtime. I couldn't tell from the show whether it was like you using pecs and stuff to pull your arms in.
It's mostly once you get it, it's much easier than you thought it was going to be. Once you lock your arms and let your body bring them in, it's basically just like holding yourself up on your arms. You're not like pushing with your muscle groups against against lateral forces. It's very linear.
Is such an amazing thing is that when you think about how the Iron Man suit was portrayed in the first Iron Man film and kind of the direction they took and how he flew, it is that the stiff arm.
I agree.
Aim down, yeah. Palms out, which is not. I remember watching that movie and thinking like that. In my mind, that wasn't how flying with like a jet powered suit would be from reading comic books, but based on physics, that is. It's like,
and it is as I didn't realize we were going to get so much Iron Man 1 footage, which is so delightful.
That was amazing.
It really. I also really enjoyed how much Scott Sorensen's cinematography. He's a camera for Savage Builds, and he's been with me for like 14 years. Scott's camera work so well cut with the real cinematic footage. Like we were using mostly primes, non-zoom lenses for Savage Builds because we wanted that heavy, that shallow depth of field, that cinematic look.
Especially with the explosion behind you, walking.
Oh, ask me how that explosion was made.
Gasoline and air?
No. Actually, we filled balloons with propane and shot them with BBs above a candle. Worked out really well.
God.
All right.
So
now you know.
I think that's. I mean, I'd encourage people to watch the behind the scenes thing that you did as well. It's like a 6-minute video, shot in the shop over here, and you talk about the problems with working with 3D printed titanium.
Oh my
that
God,
that was amazing.
It was so intense.
Yeah.
And the Colorado School of Mines. You know, I've been lucky enough to spend a lot of time now at two small, prestigious, hyper-focused engineering schools. The first one was New Mexico Tech, where Mythbusters and I did a ton of stories down there in New Mexico. Colorado School of Mines is so much of a piece of the same kind of concentrated brilliance of the students and the teachers. I just love that place. And a few of the Colorado School of Mines students came to NAMMCON. I saw them there this weekend in Chattanooga.
Awesome.
Tennessee.
There's a segue for you.
That's a good segue.
I was clapping in my head. Well done.
Wow.
Saves me from all the work. Tell me about Tennessee.
Tennessee was great. Oh, my gosh. So apparently when we showed up on Friday, it had been pouring rain and balls hot at the same time all week.
Yeah, that's Chattanooga for you.
And then when we arrived, it was like 75.
Nice.
It was great. On the second day, it was like 80. And finally, Sunday when I left, it was getting balls hot again. But we had the weather and it was glorious. Chattanooga, which I have been to before on one of my tours, is such a beautiful little city.
There's something magical happening in those small cities. We were talking about this before the show. But as a person who came from a small city in the South, there's something really neat happening where those downtown urban areas in like these 300,000 person cities are kind of indistinguishable from your Austins and your Portlands and your San Franciscos.
Well, and with Chattanooga lobbied to bring NAMMCON there. They were very, they're super wired, 10 gigabit internet for everybody.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah. Ooh, fiber everywhere.
Luxury.
It's wonderful.
Yeah. Our fiber is crap compared to their fiber.
Mayor Burke, who I spent some time with, is fantastic and super forward thinking. I actually had dinner with him one night with three or four other mayors.
Oh.
Mayors of cities so that were small enough that being mayor is not a full-time job.
Oh, right. So like Saudi Arabia,
like 30,000, 25,000, 30,000, 45,000,
up to 40,000 probably.
They can say, I'm also the mayor.
Right, exactly.
Right.
Yeah. And that was really cool talking someone once said to me that the reason a big city mayor was never going to win the presidency is because mayor, this is a very funny statement, mayor is the highest elected office that you still have to actually do the work.
Yeah, that sounds right.
Right?
Above
and because
that,
you have to
people.
Do the work, and the mayors all nodded in agreement when I told them this, because you have to do the work, you're going to piss off as many people as you're going to please. You're making actual enemies, and thus, yeah. in a big city, Bill de Blasio's never going to get across the line because too many New Yorkers despise him.
Yeah, if the cops like him, then somebody else hates him.
Exactly. Yeah. But it felt lovely to be able to talk about those forward-thinking policies, about bringing technology and also equalizing access to makerspaces. I mean, everything that NomCon stands for is what Chattanooga is about. And other cities that I've gotten to spend time in, places like Cleveland and Pittsburgh, are also looking towards the same methods to uplift their populace and you know, do what we want to do, which is train a generation of digital natives.
Well, that's it. Provide opportunity for people so that everybody doesn't move to San Francisco and New York and all these other places.
Yeah.
They don't need to.
They can't.
Did you feel like this year, lessons from last year had, you know, had evolved or bore fruit or...
That's a really good question. I'm not sure I have a direct... I was so on the ground. I mean... I spent 3 hours on Saturday just talking to attendees out in the hallway, which was super awesome. You know, everyone brings their experience. And the great thing about NomCon is there's space for everyone to learn from each other's experience.
What's the purpose of NomCon, just for people who don't know?
NomCon is an annual convention put on by Nation of Makers, a nonprofit that I sit on the board with, along with some other amazing makers around the country. Nation of Makers seeks to provide material support and intellectual support and curricula for makerspaces setting up all around the country.
And this spun out of the maker initiatives that happened during the Obama administration.
It did. Out of the Office of Science and Technology Policy under the direct tutelage of Tom Khalil, who is like a lot of my friends' gateway drug to public service. and NomCon is where we can meet up with makerspaces around the country and talk about initiatives and talk about what's working and also how to build databases and share our knowledge and understanding. Part of this comes out of sort of the 4-H idea of the New Deal, realizing that the Dust Bowl happened because farmers were using antiquated techniques for farming, and that if we shared best practices across, it would be a net benefit to everybody. Nation of Makers at its loftiest is absolutely the same kind of goal. So that if you're starting a makerspace, you're not starting from scratch. You have a resource and you have people you can reach out to that can assist you in everything from best practices for fundraising, who to go to for money, how to ask for it, and then what kind of tools might your makerspace include and how might you get word to different communities that it exists.
So a lot of organizers, a lot of people who have had experience setting up lots of makerspaces or are starting their first one.
Exactly.
Yeah, open to the public.
And I mean, I ran into a young couple who like had apparently buttonholed me at South By a couple of years ago and said that they had this goal to start this company, and that 2 years later it had been successful beyond their wildest imagination.
That's awesome.
And you know, it's just like that story times a million.
Speaking of 4-H,
yeah,
I went to the county fair this weekend.
Oh, how was the county fair?
Is this Sacramento?
No, this is the San Mateo one. It's moved on now. There's another one in Alameda, and it moves around a little bit. It's Marin next, I think, and then Alameda, and then Petaluma. So I hadn't been to a county fair since I was a kid, but we figured, you know, with a 6-year-old, it's the right time to go. And it was, you know, part the normal carny experience of turning you upside down and shaking as much money out of you as they can.
Right. $15 for cotton candy.
Yeah, it was more like the rides are really expensive now.
Oh, really?
All
the rides that come off the back of a truck?
The rides that come off the back of the truck are assembled by people, you know, but they were very nice, actually. There's no seediness. So we did rides, but we also went and looked at the stuff that the local 4-H clubs have done. I didn't really realize that there was a lot of 4-H here. But there were, you know, a bunch of kids had brought sheep and pigs and rabbits and goats, and I assume there were chickens someplace. We didn't see them. And then also had all the competitions. So like the traditional you know, food making competitions, photography competitions, like
pies.
Crafts, tons of pies and cookies, cakes,
corn dogs, fried butter.
We had corn dogs. I didn't see any fried butter, but there were fried Oreos. and I had a chocolate dipped ice cream cone that was pretty, nice. Pretty banger.
That's awesome.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Highly recommend. If you have kids, it's a good activity.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I know there are a bunch of other things in the media I want to discuss, but I'm going to give a recommendation. I know you want to talk about John Wick.
I would love to talk about John Wick. I think we have different feelings about John Wick.
Oh, my God. Speaking of John Wick, I am obsessed with Super Hot. On the
have you not played it yet?
Adam's VR obsession.
I hadn't played it yet.
Oh, my God, John. Oh, it's so good.
So, you know, in order so that I don't hit my grid on the Oculus, I often draw my grid bigger than the space I'm in, just a little bit.
Do you play in your living room?
Well, yeah, I was playing in a hotel room.
My hotel room trick, because hotel rooms usually don't have a lot of like square footage, is to, I'm never like, knees against the bed, because then the space above the bed is open arm space.
Right, nice. Yeah. Well, so what I did was, I stayed at this beautiful boutique hotel in Chattanooga. I'm here to recommend the Dwell Hotel to you. Mm. It is a hipster hotel extraordinaire. Here, wait, I'm going to show you my hotel room, and I'll send this to you, Norman. You can put it at the bottom of this, because it's really worth seeing. Here is my hotel room at the Dwell Hotel.
Oh, that's beautiful.
Wow, that's very, very that's plenty
of space. Yeah, so I had a lot of space to play Super Hot, except that I used it all, and at one point I reached down to pick up a gun and smashed my face right into a coffee table.
Yep.
Your Siri's going.
Oh, sorry, Siri.
That happens.
Yeah, you get your merit badge. You're
my glasses got all fogged up.
Look, one time when we were doing prototypes, I was setting up in a hotel room to demo to some very wealthy people who were potential investors. And as I was testing out the space, punched a wall, prototype controller exploded everywhere. It was literally a $1,000 hotel room that I had for just the afternoon to do this demo.
Oh, my gosh.
And I had to drive all the way from down south back to my house to get the spare controller.
Oh.
So at least you didn't break anything.
Yeah,
but you like the game. You like the way it makes you feel. They succeeded and make you feel like John Wick.
What I found I really liked. Okay, I'm going to start with what I didn't like.
Okay.
The throwing mechanics felt like garbage to me.
The physics.
I just couldn't.
The aiming.
So throwing is hard in general because your brain is used to a really definitive when you release between two fingers. And when you're doing it, when you're articulating a switch, the point of the trigger on the switch, it's impossible for you, especially on the touch controllers where they have the
grip.
Does Super Hot uses the grip and then the trigger, right? Yeah. So the grip releases at an indeterminate period
and
in that throw.
That was tough for me.
Yeah. It's hard for everybody.
And so often where I'd get my practice is when I won a level and it was saying Super Hot and I still had crap around me.
Yeah.
I took the opportunity to pick up everything and work on my throwing technique. And again, I'm a fairly physically intuitive human being, and I could not achieve a consistency that made sense to me.
Your brain is telling you you need to throw that hard enough to actually kill someone, but all you have to do is touch them. So you can just underhand it, and it's a lot. Underhands are easier than overhands.
I actually had an underhanded hit with a wine bottle, hit a guy square in the chest so slow it bounced. It broke on him and did not get him.
Oh, yep. Man.
Yeah, so I found the limit to that, too.
Wow, nice job, Adam.
Thank you. That was my biggest problem. I found I really loved how much it forced you to think through every single step.
Yeah.
To go ahead and waste a little time looking around you, which I thought was neat that even that got your opponents to move.
Just a little bit. Head movement's really minor compared to rotational movement's minor compared to translational.
And I also was shocked at the how quickly those shotgun blasts can get to you when you're throwing stuff.
It lets you know that, you know, dodging bullets is not easy.
Yeah.
Even if you have control over mastery over time.
My favorite thing was realizing that I could use my knife to slice bullets in half in midair.
Yeah. You can use your gun to block stuff too.
Here's a feature I want. I want to be able to use that ashtray to deflect a bullet towards another opponent.
That's a different game.
Is it?
It's not on Quest, but there's a game that's like that on.
But I want to do. That's what I want in Super Hot. I want to be able to do that. I'd love to be able to use a mirror to see around a corner.
Oh, God.
You're asking a lot.
You're making developers scream. They're like, this is not going to work for
guys. Just take a long weekend and give me this functionality.
And you can implement this in 2 weeks.
I really, really I really enjoyed it. It's an impressive game. It doesn't include the thing that I found makes me most sick in VR is any kind of like click there to move over there.
You don't always teleport.
Makes me absolutely moving automatically also.
So if the movement happens instantaneously, you shouldn't notice.
And I didn't. If they do frames, when you finish a level and you're now 16 feet away looking from a different angle, I didn't have a problem with that at all. Yeah. I also really liked the spaces. Like I really loved the way they again, it's this wonderful mix. I understand how much processing power it takes to procedurally generate this stuff.
Well, that's not procedurally generated. That's all bespoke.
Designed, yeah.
Yeah.
But, sorry, the environment's not procedurally generated, but the behavior of your environment is.
That game is pretty tightly scripted. Like, the characters behave more or less the same way every time.
I found characters dodging my bullets. Am I wrong about that?
The setup for the system is always the same, and then the inputs that you feed into it can change, and the characters have behaviors based on their AI. So, for example, if they see you shoot at them, they will dodge or they'll duck behind a pillar or something.
So, when I was in the hijacking in the airplane, when I'm in the galley trying to shoot the guy coming down the aisle and the other guy coming around the corner, I found the guy in the aisle was like really hard to predict what his behavior would be.
Yeah, some of them, yes.
Some of those agents were very clever.
Yeah. Okay.
I also found it funny that like, when you're waiting for a guy without a gun to get close and you sit there and do this.
Everyone does this. That's how you get time to get to pass.
That's really funny. I was thinking, does this.
Yeah.
That
game is it's a puzzle game that feels like a shooter. It's a shooter that is a puzzle game, is what all it is.
And I loved it. I loved. So one thing that I have a difficulty with is the 3D audio.
The sound. Yeah.
My hearing is bad enough. Mm. But I also have yet to find what I really need is a 1-foot aux cable?
Probably.
Does it work with your hearing aid or do you have to take your hearing aid out?
There's no Bluetooth.
No, but can you just like because the speakers are outside, will it just pipe in?
It does, but it ends up it's much better with headphones on.
Okay.
But my problem with headphones is all my aux cables, when I tie them up, are like they're beaten against my face. Yeah. It also gets really hot with headphones on.
Yeah.
So I start to sweat into the mask. So I still haven't solved that exact problem because the 3D audio is so important for the Vader game I couldn't play it.
It's important for all VR stuff.
Really?
Like if you need people to do something other than look straight ahead, then 3D sound is. Or you can also do like some light blurs around the edges.
You know, I have some of those Bose in-ear headphones.
Yeah.
Those would probably be the best thing for me.
I don't
me.
Think you can do Bluetooth, though.
They have those. They plug in.
They sell wired earphones that go one. You can use one ear just the other ear because there are two outputs.
Right. Oh, yeah, there are. That.
So you can just have one ear if you want.
Interesting.
I'm
enjoying
really
it. I'm literally each time I've been traveling on this book tour, I've been taking the Oculus with me. I discovered that if you charge it fully and then you put it in your bag with some socks over the lenses so that it doesn't get scratched, those socks will make it believe that my face is in it and it will drain that battery.
Oh, no.
Turn off the setting.
Yeah.
Yeah. I just jam a microfiber.
Before we continue with the conversation, I want to let you know that support for this episode of Still Entitled also comes from the fine folks at Clear. Clear helps you get through security with a tap of your fingers so you can get to the gate faster and reduce pre-flight stress. Clear replaces the need for physical ID cards, using your eyes and fingertips to get you through security in a tap. Create your account online, and then a Clear ambassador will help you finish the process at the airport, and then you can use Clear immediately. Clear helps you get through security faster in over 40 airports and stadiums across the country, with more being added every day. If you're traveling with family, up to 3 family members can be added at a discounted rate, and kids under 18 are free when traveling with a Clear member. We've all had this experience. Me especially. We travel a lot for tested. And yeah, I tend to make it to the airport at the very last minute, find my parking spot. Oh no, the tram is broken, getting me late to the terminal, running up to the gate after check-in, and there's a huge line. And I wish I had signed up for Clear because I could then get right through real fast. Clear is the absolute best way to get through airport security. It works great with PreCheck too. And right now you can get your first 2 months of Clear for free. Go to clearme.com/untitled and use the code Untitled. That's CLEARME.com/untitled and use the code untitled for free 2 months of Clear. Now back to the conversation.
Anyway, John Wick.
John Wick 3, Parabellum.
We both saw it.
It's called Parabellum.
I have not seen it yet.
Which tells you everything you need to know about what the people think about themselves making this movie. Yeah.
What do you mean?
They're very hoity-toity. They're calling your movie Parabellum, which means prepare for war, but like it's... They take their film...
Para means before,
they take their
it?
Writing very seriously.
Okay.
I think the world they've built, they love it.
You're saying this with a little bit of disdain in your voice. So I'm trying to figure out the point.
And I didn't like that.
You didn't like it?
I didn't like it that much.
Huh.
Yeah.
So I liked the simplicity of the first film.
Mm.
I liked it a lot better than the second one. The first one is still far and away my favorite.
The first one blew me away. I've watched it three times now. The second one, I really... My problem with the second one is not the action, which is just as good as the first one.
Yeah.
It's that the narrative around the action I felt was too much John Wick. Like, the first one's great because it turns out this weirdo is a god.
Yep.
That's what the plot seems to me.
But there's a twist. And the first one is good because of that twist. You're watching that movie. You have no idea what's going on. The dog gets killed.
Right.
And then all of a sudden he starts murdering people, like, for the next hour and a half.
Right.
And it's just like, holy shit, this is not at all what I was expecting. You can't ride on that on the second movie. And they didn't.
No. And the second movie, he feels too weak to me, actually.
It's so relentlessly
on the run and being harmed
that I didn't feel the same.
Like, I'm fascinated and thrilled by his competency, not the lack of it.
So for me, the second one, there were a couple things I liked. Like that final sequence when he comes back to New York at the end of the second movie and he's just fighting his way through from basically Lawrence Fishburne on with the seven bullets.
Right.
is an exceptional piece of filmmaking.
Agreed.
I detest the bits. Anytime he has to go engage with somebody in that world, whether the gun scene is the one that jumps out, when he goes to the sommelier in the hotel in Italy and they're talking about getting, he's like, I need something that's a little more robust.
Right.
It is the antithesis of what John Wick is.
Right.
To me, John Wick was this stripped down, bare bones.
Yeah. And I think the third one does it's a little too overindulgent for my taste.
Oh.
In the world they've built.
I thought they dialed back.
How do you compare it to the second one? You liked it better?
No, I liked it more. Ooh. I think it's a steady decline. I liked it. I think it's just a little bit of a decline.
Well, I got to see it. I'm going to see it.
Yeah,
I'm really
should.
Looking forward
Here's
to it.
Here's the thing that will sell you on John Wick 3 if you're on the fence. Because the action is amazing and the choreography is incredible. It has the two stars from the Raid films. The Raid 2. Have you seen The Raid and The Raid 2?
I have not. The Korean films.
No, not Korean. Indonesian.
Really?
The Raid, yeah.
Oh, okay.
Sorry, it's a little bit of homework.
I will get you a copy somehow.
Okay.
But The Raid has some of the best choreographed action of... This is like when we talk about, like, you know, someone recommending Akira to you.
Right.
I'm going to change your life.
Oh, good.
And tell you to watch The Raid and then The Raid 2. And we're going to talk about it on this podcast when you get back.
As a side note here, derail for just a second. There's apparently an 11-minute single-shot fight scene in the third season of Daredevil.
Oh, I haven't seen it.
I haven't seen it.
That was not eligible for an Emmy for fight choreography because the submissions could not be longer than 3 minutes.
What?
That's the system
oh, that
breaking
sucks.
Down. Yeah,
and I couldn't find a guy. I'm gonna have to watch it because I think what they were trying to do was repeat the success of that amazing hallway fight, which is also based
one.
On The Raid, is it not?
I think I don't want to speak for the choreographers, but I think the Raid has a 10 minute.
Yeah, so I believe
that's the movie with the corridor fight, right?
Yeah,
you're talking about Old Boy.
Oh, I'm thinking about Old Boy.
I'm mixing up my...
Yeah. I think the stunt choreographers...
I'm mixing up the foreign films. I'm mixing up other countries' films that the U.S. has ripped off for their brands.
Yeah. And I don't want to say ripped off, but I do think that the choreographers do admire...
Totally.
The work that, you know, that
not to
other...
say that not to say that even taking someone else's choreography and
it's
trying
easy.
To film
no,
it the
no,
same
no.
is easy.
Absolutely not. But they do, you know, it's call and response. And The Raid has some of the best action and best choreography and best, like, just... elevation of sequences and increasing difficulty, and two of the actors from The Raid who were also in Star Wars The Force Awakens, I believe they're the ones on the ship when Han Solo
the monster ship
yep they're two of the people that, like, you know, you betrayed us last time you
oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, they're also in John Wick 3.
So are they the guys that the mid-level bosses?
Yes.
Yeah, that was a good sequence.
All right, I will see John Wick.
You should watch The Raid.
Okay.
And The Raid 2.
Yeah, let's. I'm totally looking forward to that.
We should
to
talk
that.
About
let's
that.
Discuss.
And
yeah.
It's, you know, where we think its place is in martial arts.
I feel like
history.
I feel like Dread. I haven't seen The Raid 2. I saw The Raid.
The
I feel
Raid
like Dread
and Dread
is inspired
are,
a
yes.
lot by The Raid.
I think they've acknowledged
Dread
that.
Was inspired by The Raid 2?
Yeah. Yeah. The Raid
okay.
1.
The Raid 1. Okay.
It's a one building.
Love Dread. Yeah.
Floor by floor. Yeah. The recommendation I wanted to give has nothing to do with martial arts, but it's to go with food. On Netflix, Jon Favreau has a show called The Chef Show.
Yeah.
And ooh. I don't know if you've seen this,
no.
but
oh.
Jon Favreau did a movie called Chef.
Which is a wonderful little movie.
It's so delightful. It's about, you know, a very successful, traditional, you know, French-style cooking chef who then goes on a road trip with
his
son.
He has a falling out with his benefactor.
Mm-hmm.
He gets fired, and he builds a Cuban sandwich truck. A
Cubano truck with John Leguizamo.
Yeah.
There goes your John Wick connection.
And there's Chef, the movie, has all this wonderful depiction of kitchen staff. Bobby Cannavale's in it, and Scarlett Johansson. It's all Favreau's friends.
Yeah.
And it's lovely for the camaraderie and love of kitchen.
So it turns out, born out of the making of that film, was Jon Favreau not only learning and appreciating fine cooking and it's the world of cooking, but then really getting obsessed with it.
Well, so he had a trainer in that film.
Roy Choi.
Roy Choi, yeah.
Roy Choi. So Roy Choi, there's at the end of Chef, the movie, you get to see some behind the scenes footage of Roy Choi teaching Jon Favreau how to cook, and is specifically teaching him for a sequence that's an amazing sequence where Favreau makes a grilled cheese sandwich for his son on an electric plancha.
I'm getting hungry just thinking about it.
Now, I loved this sequence so much, I bought that electric plancha. It's like a $500 kitchen implement, but I'm getting chills as I describe it. There's no better way to make a grilled cheese
sandwich.
You're welcome to come over anytime and we can make them together.
Yeah.
But there's this sequence where Roy Choi is showing Favreau, he's like, okay, so you do this with the mayonnaise, and you get this on, and you get this. And then Choi lifts up the corner of a sandwich. I'm going to curse here, podcast listeners. I know it's a rarity, but it's important in this. Roy Choi lifts up the corner of the sandwich and says to Favreau, you see that color of brown? Your whole fucking life is in that color of brown. And it is, I once got to spend a week with cellist David Darling learning about how to play music from a philosophical rather than instrument perspective. I think that's the best way to describe what we went through. But at one point, David Darling said, a musician plays a note with the quality of a human life. Like, it has a beginning, a middle, and an end. It has a full living arc. And so does a song, and so does a symphony. And like, I feel like that's what Roy Choi was saying to Favreau about that. And I love, like, I've always loved that movie and those behind the scenes specifically for that.
And that behind the scenes is what this Netflix series is
it's basically. All like that?
Well, it's revisiting, like, Jon Favreau, turns out after he made that film, he started cooking.
Yeah.
And he built out a great kitchen and it's filmed in his home kitchen.
Oh,
and
wow.
So remember when we had Tracy come over years ago and make the omelet?
Yeah.
It feels like that. But with Jon Favreau and Roy Choi, they do a whole episode where they celebrate Jonathan Gold, the food critic who passed away in L.A. Dave Chenk pops up out of nowhere. It's like, what are you guys making? Oh, you guys making kimchi fried rice? Well, let me make some kimchi fried rice. But they revisit a lot of the foods they made for Chef. You know, they go to Franklin Barbecue in Austin.
Yeah.
They make the grilled cheese sandwich. They make beignets. They make a Cubano. And it's real fun. But the best part of the show is Jon Favreau is so adorably earnest. Because it's been years since they made the film.
Yeah.
And he goes, Roy, remember you taught me, I have this email. You texted, I have this email. You told me the recipe and now I've made it like 10 times and taste it. And did I do it right? And so he's so earnest about his love and his passion for cooking and eager and an open ear. And there's no egos anywhere. And
you
that's
know,
the best kind of cooking show.
I know Favreau a little bit. He came onto the set with his family. Actually, just around the time Chef came out. I have a Chef crew challenge coin in my challenge coin case. My experience of him was exactly that. No ego at all. Really, really earnest. And hell's bells, man. He's one of my favorite directors.
What was the show he made on IFC before Iron Man?
Dinner for Five.
Dinner for Five,
yeah.
Which was and basically five directors. I think it was always directors, maybe sometimes actors.
Yeah, sometimes actors. And it was watching famous people get drunk. That was the most fun.
Yeah, but like it also was devoid of that ego. Like, from his part, at least, was devoid of that ego.
Well,
and in a lovely way.
And I always felt like Dinner for Five was this kind of lovely space because it was before Iron Man.
Yeah. And he stopped doing it when he started doing Marvel movies, as I recall.
Right. He had done Zathura. And I guess what I felt was Favreau was like, I'm a director, but I can also do these other things.
I can tell
these other stories, yeah, and I can talk. So let me figure out mediums to do that. And as someone who's always playing around in different mediums, I felt that like I really loved how wide he has ranged with his storytelling.
Well, he made good TV, and he made what was essentially a proto podcast.
Right.
Right. It was like five people hanging around talking, just shooting the shit for an hour or two.
Yeah. And eating good food, drinking good wine.
Yeah. Yeah.
Can we talk about Fleabag? Because I finally watched it.
Okay.
I know we got to go.
Yeah.
But that last two episodes. Okay. First off, you guys did some spoilers, I think, at the end of last week's episode.
We did. Yep.
I don't. If you're worried about I think listening to those greatly enhanced my experience of watching that show.
Oh,
for the
interesting.
First time.
Your results may vary, but you're, yes.
Yeah. You didn't spoil the big thing, which we're still not going to spoil. But I think the last two episodes of that are maybe the best two episodes of TV I've ever seen, like back to back. It was just exceptional. The surprise, the way the characters developed in those last two episodes was entirely earned based on the previous 10 episodes, and was an absolute delight to watch. And I have some thoughts about who she's talking to, and I don't think it's us.
You don't think it's us?
No.
Well, it's obviously her dissociation. Right.
She's breaking the fourth wall.
And we talked about this last week again as well. But this is she breaks the fourth wall constantly throughout the series to talk to us, the viewer. And in the second season, towards the end, the priest who she's flirting with sees her do it and comments on it. And it's like cracking the world open when it happens.
Yeah,
I've never been so shocked by a brand new thing. Watching some new piece of media.
I knew it was coming and I still gasped.
And Andrew Scott, who plays the priest.
The hot priest
who famously played Moriarty in Sherlock. Yeah. I mean, couldn't be more of a different role. I love it when she says in the second to last episode, she says, yes, father. And he says, fuck you calling me father. Like it doesn't turn you on just to say it.
It's so good.
And what love for its characters it demonstrates with that ending, with the ending of the series.
Well, it was true.
Yeah.
Right? Like that was the true ending.
The true ending was that they're both really messed up.
Everybody's messed up is the true ending.
But she and he are starting that shift towards something towards healing is what I felt like I caught at the end of the episode. Again, we're not going to spoil exactly how that gets demonstrated.
I thought there were two scenes with her dad in that episode, too.
Sharing in the cigarette. Attic,
yeah. The sharing the cigarette and in the attic that were just heartbreaking. And I'm tearing up a little bit and getting chills at the same time. But it felt like the kind of relationship a person can have with another person only after 30 or 40 years of shared history. And you don't get that on TV a lot.
I will tell you that as a parent, that show has deeply affected me. Having two adult children now.
Yeah.
I have my experience of my children, but the show made it put such grace in the dichotomy between the way we view ourselves and the way we are viewed by the people that love us, and how those things can be radically different, and how, you know, people close to us might look at us as beyond recovery, and yet we can see the possibilities within ourselves. I mean, the key moments throughout the series have always seemed to me to be about kindness, the kindness of the loan officer.
Yeah,
in the two spaces mm-hmm. he shows up in the show, and what a weird and wonderful character.
Well, the kindness of Fleabag in the end when she comes in and is trying to settle things with her soon to be stepmom, and gets it like, oh, the stepmom is such a wonderful character,
Olivia Colman.
Yeah,
oh my
and
God,
she's so terrible.
She says. Olivia Colman says there's not a sentence that comes. Did I say this last week?
Yeah.
You did. Okay. There's one sentence that when you first meet her, she's not immediately horrible. Because I was waiting for that. Like that doesn't start until midway through the first season.
That's hilarious.
But so I was watching that, and at first I thought that show was about trying to make a character that is as unlikable as possible that the audience still likes. because you like the character even when you find out the depths to which she's sunk.
Well, and they give her some really interesting things, right? She's a shitbird, but she's a painter and she's an excellent painter.
Yeah,
she's a wonderful artist.
Yeah,
right. Like that's a lovely thing to give a character that level of complexity.
And she clearly loves the husband or the father for good reasons.
Okay, open question.
Yeah,
The main character of Fleabag never gets named.
Fleabag. They call her Fleabag.
They call her
in the
Fleabag in the closed captions. Yeah. And because it's in, because it's from the British Isles, I have to watch it with closed captioning on. And so you get to see that the godmother is only listed as the godmother. Dad is dad. And at one point, the godmother tries to introduce the dad and she can't say his name. So what is the significance of who gets and doesn't get names within the show?
The character.
So is it Claire and her family get named then?
Claire and her husband.
The husband doesn't get a name.
Yeah, he does.
What's his name?
I'm drawing a blank right now, but Claire's husband has a name.
Husband, the creepy kid.
The creepy kid.
Yeah. Hi, Claire.
The friend, the dead friend.
Yep.
Boo. Boo gets a name.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Although Boo could
guinea
be a nickname.
Pig gets a name.
The guinea pig gets a nickname.
Yeah, Claire's husband, Fleabag. Harry.
Oh, right, because he has a beard.
Yeah.
So
my only issue with the series is he's a little too venal for me in the second season. He's like unrelentingly dark and kind of the degree to which he and Fleabag seek to harm each other. I found really upsetting, actually. Not exhausting, actually, just upsetting.
I think
that was my only issue with
having never been through a divorce personally. I don't know what that experience is like. But I can see, I mean, that came from a place of a sad, angry man.
Yeah.
You know?
He's wonderful. Look, every performance in it. But again, I'm really curious. I have yet to cough up a structure in my head about why some characters get names and others don't.
I don't.
But I believe there's a purpose behind that. And I'm curious about what it might be.
I mean, if you think about it, the people that don't have names have titles that are self-descriptive, right? So, like, you know, her dad is her dad, her godmother's her godmother,
right,
slash stepmother.
Right.
I don't know that you could have had as much interaction with her sister without having a name. Like, just mechanically writing that script would have been really challenging.
Sure, but I can't believe that it would just be mechanical.
It seems intentional.
It does. It feels quite intentional.
Don't have an answer.
Yeah. So this is an open question. I'd love to see your ideas in the comments.
And what do you think about the fox? What does the fox represent?
I think the fox is like the rat in The Departed. They're going to remove it in the digital
remake. Fuck off. The fox, the fox is clearly the priest's sexuality.
Repressed sexuality.
We talked about that last week.
No, we didn't.
The fox shows up the moment she asks about celibacy. It's the first time we learn about foxes. Yeah. And it's funny because the way he approaches the foxes is both with genuine fear but also humor, which is also the way he approaches Fleabag to a certain extent.
Yeah. Anything that challenges him, it seems like.
And so I think it might be I haven't yet fully unpacked in my head the narrative grid of the way she deals with her own sexuality and also the priest deals with his own sexuality and the way they deal with their sexuality to each other. It's such a fascinating set of portraits.
The turn when her dad says, that's why you're so hurt by it. When they're talking about love,
you love more than all of us,
and that's why it hurts you so much. And she's like, it doesn't hurt me. Clearly hurts her.
Yeah.
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 And then, anyway,
those moments of grace between dad and Fleabag are really, you're right. They're super, super moving.
Well, because, it's made stronger by the fact that in the early parts of the show, when her dad comes to confront her about stealing the statue, he's just like, well, that's all I can do. I clearly have no relationship with this woman. And then as it goes on, it becomes clear that everybody involved really loves each other, except maybe the stepmother.
But dad deserves to be happy. He's right.
Yeah. Everybody's right. And everybody's awful. And everybody's fucked up. And
this is welcome
very, very
to the
good.
World.
Yeah.
And to those of you that watched Fleabag on our recommendation and tweeted to me, thank you. I love knowing that we're able to give other folks this wonderful show. I have now watched the second season 3 times.
Wow.
I've watched the first season 2x, and I plan to watch it again. I really can't get enough of this show.
And this is it's over.
Yeah, that's it.
She walks away. She waves to us.
She's
it's all done.
And I mean, the second season is maybe one of the best six episodes of television I've seen in ages.
Like, God bless England, because if this was made in the, when they remake this for the United States, it's going to be 12 seasons.
Wow.
There's going to be,
who's
the cast?
No, I don't know. Oh. Yeah. Not, no. Yeah, no.
Mark Ruffalo will play. Yeah. So my
hot priest Mark Ruffalo, so, yes, please.
My friend Leah and Jessica host a wonderful show, which you should listen to, Sundays at 11 o'clock, Sundays at 10 o'clock on BFF.FM. They have a show called TV on the Radio. And a couple weeks ago, my wife, Julia, was on the show to talk to Leah about it. And Julia said the priest is as if, wait, let me get this right. It's as if Mark Ruffalo, oh my God, I'm actually going to screw this up.
I think it's okay. You said it last week.
Did I?
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay. All I'm doing is the same podcast 2 weeks in a row.
Look, I'm sorry. This is
my
fault.
Go back and listen to last week's if you didn't hear this.
Thank you for indulging me.
Sorry about that.
Your book's on newsstands now. You can get it at adamsavagebook.com.
Adamsavagebook.com. My new show, Savage Builds, is on Discovery Channel Friday nights at 10 and on Science Channel Wednesday nights at 10, both times after BattleBots, which you should also be watching because it's awesome.
Those robots,
it is a
really
good time for TV and books.
Enjoy your time off.
Thank you. Yeah. We will. It's a long time coming. It's been a very, very busy year. It's the last thing. I trammed my mill yesterday, which is something if you own a mill, you've got to tune it in. You have to sure everything is perfectly level. And I trammed it to a half a thou across every axis yesterday. It took me about 3 hours. And it was such a grace to spend that time kind of wrapping my arms around one of my favorite tools. And I realized, how long has it been since I've actually had that kind of time in the cave? Since November.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it's been a while. So, you know, part of the vacation is going to be coming in here for a couple hours at a time to kind of reconnect with the space and kind of get to know it again.
Hey, shout out to Simone, who made an amazing
video.
She did something. She made a small modification to her Tesla Model 3.
just type truckload into
YouTube.
Simone remains one of the most inspiring humans that I am lucky to know, and even luckier to be able to watch her output.
And we're lucky she's on the forces of good.
Yeah. I know.
At least so far.
At least so far.
Anything on the site, Norm?
Yeah, plenty of stuff. There's a one-day build this week, which is building the stand that this Iron Man armor is on right now. You should go check that out. And a couple of weeks ago, we went to visit a fabrication shop that made the statues, the recreations of Neil Armstrong's spacesuit, which are now in 15 ballparks around the country.
Celebrating the reboot of the suit, which will get unveiled this summer as part of Apollo 50th anniversary celebrations.
Yep, so that's going to be on the site later this week.
Awesome.
We are working on some really, really fun tested stuff for later on this year. There's a whole bunch of really, really cool stuff coming down the pike. And we're also filming some content that will actually not be aired for another year.
What?
Yeah. You're doing some franchise stuff that's very exciting.
Ooh. Okay.
I'm going to stop the podcast here before we leak any more info.
Yeah. See you all next week.
Bye, guys.
Bye.